from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, we continue our special report, taking a closer look at Baltimore, past and present.
Not even the sternest police action, nor the most effective federal troops, can ever create lasting peace in our cities. The only genuine, long-range solution for what has happened lies in an attack mounted at every level upon the conditions that breed despair and breed violence. All of us, I think, know what those conditions are. Ignorance, discrimination, slums, poverty, disease, not enough jobs. And we should attack these conditions not because we are frightened by conflict, but because we are fired by conscience. We should attack them because there's simply no other way to achieve a decent and orderly society in America.
That was then-President Lyndon Baines Johnson in July 1967, as the third consecutive summer of uprisings took place in American cities. Violence erupting in the Los Angeles community of Watts in 1965, in Chicago in 1966, and in Newark and Detroit in 1967, led Johnson to announce the creation of the National Advisory Commission on Civil Disorders, known as the Kerner Commission after its chair, Illinois Governor Otto Kerner Jr., an 11-member panel charged with investigating the causes of what were termed race riots and to provide recommendations for the future.
There was some discussion about within the report about how we have to look at the broader context in which law enforcement is happening. Our approach to our drug laws, for example, and the criminalization of nonviolent offenses, rather than take more of a public health approach. That may be something that has an impact in eroding trust between law enforcement and communities. Issues, broader issues of poverty and isolation may have an impact. I emphasize the task force that I think it's important for us to recognize that context, but I don't want us to have such a 40,000-foot argument that we lose track of the very specific concrete practices that can be instituted right now that will make a difference.
And that was President Barack Obama in March of this year as he reviewed the report of his task force on 21st century policing, created in December of last year to investigate the uprisings still in progress in the U.S., beginning most recently with the uprising in Ferguson, Missouri last summer. The difference in approach between the 1967 Kerner Commission and the current presidential task force illustrates in a fundamental way the changes in governing that have evolved over the past 48 years, and here, even the changes in rhetoric show how far to the right American politics has moved since 1967. We begin with President Johnson's announcement of the creation of the Kerner Commission on July 27, 1967, in its entirety.
My fellow Americans, we have endured a week such as no nation should live through, a time of violence and tragedy. For a few minutes tonight, I want to talk about that tragedy, and I want to talk about the deeper questions that it raises for us all. I am tonight appointing a special advisory commission on civil disorders. Governor Otto Kerner of Illinois has agreed to serve as chairman. Mayor John Lindsay of New York will serve as vice chairman. Its other members will include Fred R. Harris, the senator from Oklahoma, Edward W. Brooke, United States senator from Massachusetts, James C. Corman, the United States representative from California, 22nd District, Los Angeles, William M. McCullough, the U.S. representative from the state of Ohio, the 4th District, I.W. Abel, the president of the United Steelworkers, Charles B. Thornton, the president, director, and chairman of the board of Litton Industries, Incorporated, Roy Wilkins, the executive director of the NAACP, Catherine Graham Payden, the commissioner of commerce of the state of Kentucky, Herbert Jenkins, the chief of police, Atlanta, Georgia. The commission will investigate the origins of the recent disorders in our cities. It will make recommendations to me, to the Congress, to the state governors, and to the mayors for measures to prevent or contain such disasters in the future. In their work, the commission members will have access to the facts that are gathered by Director Edgar Hoover and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The FBI will continue to exercise its full authority to investigate these riots in accordance with my standing instructions and continue to search for evidence of conspiracy. But even before the commission begins its work, and even before all the evidence is in, there are some things that we can tell about the outbreaks of this summer. First, let there be no mistake about it. The looting and arson and plunder and pillage which have occurred are not part of a civil rights protest. There is no American right to loot stores or to burn buildings or to fire rifles from the rooftops. That is crime, and crime must be dealt with forcefully and swiftly and certainly under law. Innocent people, Negro and white, have been killed. Damage to property owned by Negroes and white is calamitous. Worst of all, fear and bitterness which have been loosed will take long months to erase. The criminals who committed these acts of violence against the people deserve to be punished, and they must be punished. Explanations may be offered, but nothing can excuse what they have done. There will be attempts to interpret the events of the past few days. But when violence strikes, then those in public responsibility have an immediate and a very different job, not to analyze, but to end disorder. That they must seek to do with every means at our command, through local, through police and state officials, and in extraordinary circumstances where local authorities have stated that they cannot maintain order with their own resources, then through federal authority that we have limited authority to use. I have tonight directed the Secretary of Defense to issue new training standards for riot control procedures immediately to National Guard units across the country. Through the Continental Army Command, this expanded training will begin immediately. The National Guard must have the ability to respond effectively and quickly and appropriately in conditions of disorder and violence. And those charged with the responsibility of law enforcement should and must be respected by all of our people. The violence must be stopped quickly, finally, and permanently. It would compound the tragedy, however, if we should settle for order that's imposed by the muzzle of a gun. In America, we seek more than the uneasy calm of martial law. We seek peace that's based on one man's respect for another man and upon mutual respect for law. We seek a public order that's built on steady progress in meeting the needs of all of our people. And not even the sternest police action, nor the most effective federal troops, can ever create lasting peace in our cities. The only genuine, long-range solution for what has happened lies in an attack mounted at every level upon the conditions that breed despair and breed violence. All of us, I think, know what those conditions are. Ignorance, discrimination, slums, poverty, disease, not enough jobs. And we should attack these conditions not because we are frightened by conflict, but because we are fired by conscience. We should attack them because there is simply no other way to achieve a decent and orderly society in America. In the past 3.5 years, we have directed the greatest governmental effort in all of our American history at these ancient enemies. The roll call of those laws reveals the depth of our American concern. The Model Cities Act, the Voters' Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, the Rent Supplement Act, Medicare and Medicaid, the 24 educational bills, Head Start, the Job Corps, the Neighborhood Youth Corps, the Teachers Corps, Manpower Development and Training, and many, many more acts too numerous to mention on television tonight. And we will continue to press for laws which would protect our citizens from violence, like the Safe Streets and Crime Control Act now under consideration in the Congress, and the Gun Control Act. And our work has just begun. Yet there are those who feel that even this beginning is too much. There are those who would have us turn back even now at the beginning of this journey. Last week in Congress, a small but important plan for action in the cities was voted down in the House of Representatives. The members of that body rejected my request for $20 million to fight the pestilence of rats. Rats which prowl in dark alleys and tenements and attack thousands of city children. The passage of this legislation would have meant much to the children of the slums. And a strong government that has spent millions to protect baby calves from worms could surely afford to show as much concern for baby boys and girls. And there are some tonight who feel that we cannot afford a Model Cities program. And they reduced my request for funds this year by 2/3. And there's some who feel that we cannot afford additional good teachers for the children of poverty in urban areas, or new efforts to house those that are most in need of housing, or to aid in education to those who need to read and write. Theirs is a strange system of bookkeeping. I believe that we should be counting the assets that these measures can bring to America. Cities richer in opportunity. Cities more full of promise. Cities of order and progress and happiness. Instead, some are counting the seeds of bitterness. This is not a time for angry reaction, but I think it is a time for action. Starting with legislative action to improve the life in our cities. The strength and the promise of the law are the surest remedies for tragedy in the streets. But laws are only one answer. Another answer lies in the way that our people respond to these disturbances. There is a danger that the worst toll of this tragedy will be counted in the hearts of Americans, in hatred, in insecurity, in fear, in heated words which will not end the conflict, but will rather prolong it. So let us acknowledge the tragedy, but let us not exaggerate it. Let's look about tonight. Let's look at ourselves, and I think we'll see these things. Most Americans, Negro and white, are leading decent, responsible, and productive lives. Most Americans, Negro and white, seek safety in their neighborhoods and harmony with their neighbors. Nothing can destroy goodwill more than a period of needless strife and suspicion between the races. Let us condemn the violent few. But let us remember that it is law-abiding Negro families who have really suffered most at the hands of the rioters. It is responsible Negro citizens who hope most fervently and need most urgently to share in America's growth and in America's prosperity. And this is no time to turn away from that goal. To reach it will require more than laws and much more than dollars. It will take renewed dedication and better understanding in the heart of every citizen. I know there are millions of men and women tonight who are eager to heal the wounds that we have suffered, who want to get on with the job of teaching and working and building America. And in that spirit, at the conclusion of this address, I will sign a proclamation tonight calling for a day of prayer in our nation throughout all of our states. On this Sunday, July 30th, and I urge the citizens in every town and every city and every home in this land to go into their churches to pray for order and reconciliation among men. And I appeal to every governor and every mayor and every preacher and every teacher and parent to join and give leadership in this national observance. This spirit of dedication cannot be limited to our public leaders. It just must extend to every citizen in this land. And the man who speaks to break the peace must feel the powerful disapproval of all of his neighbors. So tonight, I call upon every American to search his own heart. And to those who are tempted by violence, I would say this. Think again. Who is really the loser when violence comes? Whose neighborhood is made a shambles? Whose life is threatened most? And if you choose to tear down what other hands have built, you will not succeed. You will suffer most from your own crimes. You will learn that there are no victors in the aftermath of violence. The apostles of violence, with their ugly drumbeat of hatred, must know that they are now heading for ruin and disaster. And every man who really wants progress, our justice, our equality, must stand against them and against their miserable virus of hate. For other Americans, especially those in positions of public trust, I have this message. Yours is the duty to bring about a peaceful change in America. If your response to these tragic events is only business as usual, you invite not only disaster but dishonor. So, my fellow citizens, let us go about our work. Let us clear the streets of rubble and let's quench the fires that hatred set. Let us feed and care for those who have suffered at the rioters' hands. But there be no bones or no reward or no salutes for those who have inflicted that suffering. Let us resolve that this violence is going to stop and there will be no bonus flow from it. We can stop it. We must stop it. We will stop it. And let us build something much more lasting. Faith between man and man. Faith between race and race. Faith in each other. And faith in the promise of beautiful America. Let us pray for the day when mercy and truth are met together, righteousness and peace have kissed each other. Let us pray and let us work for better jobs and better housing and better education that so many millions of our own fellow Americans need so much tonight. Let us then act in the Congress and in the city halls and in every community so that this great land of ours may truly be one nation under God with liberty and justice for all. Good night, and thank you.
We now bring you President Obama's announcement on December 1st, 2014, of the creation of his special task force on 21st century policing in its entirety.
As I said last week, in the wake of the grand jury decision, I think Ferguson laid bare a problem that is not unique to St. Louis or that area, and is not unique to our time, and that is a simmering distrust that exists between too many police departments and too many communities of color. The sense that in a country where one of our basic principles, perhaps the most important principle, is equality under the law, that too many individuals, particularly young people of color, do not feel as if they are being treated fairly. And as I said last week, when any part of the American family does not feel like it is being treated fairly, that's a problem for all of us. It's not just a problem for some. It's not just a problem for a particular community or a particular demographic. It means that we are not as strong as a country as we can be. And when applied to the criminal justice system, it means we're not as effective in fighting crime as we could be. And as a consequence, what I've been able to do today, thanks to excellent work by Eric Holder, our Attorney General, who had to fly down to Atlanta to start a conversation down there around these issues, as well as the outstanding leaders around this table, is to begin a process in which we're able to surface an honest conversation between law enforcement, community activists, academics, elected officials, the faith community, try to determine what the problems are, and most importantly, try to come up with concrete solutions that can move the ball forward. I'm convinced that if we work hard, that we can make sure that police officers and the communities they serve are partners in battling crime, partners in making sure everybody feels safe, that we can build confidence and we can build trust, but it's not going to happen overnight. In order to advance that goal, here are a couple of specific steps that we're taking. First of all, I want to thank Chuck Ramsey, the commissioner of the Philadelphia Police Department, as well as Lori Robinson, who is a professor of criminology, law and society at George Mason University, and a former assistant attorney general. They are going to co-chair a task force that is not only going to reach out and listen to law enforcement, community activists, other stakeholders, but is going to report to me specifically in 90 days with concrete recommendations, including best practices for communities where law enforcement and neighborhoods are working well together. How do they create accountability? How do they create transparency? How do they create trust? And how can we at the federal level work with state and local communities to make sure that some of those best practices get institutionalized? So this is not going to be an endless report that ends up collecting dust on a shelf. My expectation is concrete recommendations that we can begin to operationalize both at the federal, state, and local levels. And the good news is that we've got two folks who are respected by activists and respected by law enforcement, and I'm confident they're going to do an outstanding job. I want them to help us make sure that crime continues to go down while community trust in the police goes up. Second, one of the issues that came up during the response to the Ferguson back in August was the issue of military equipment being utilized in the face of protests that may be taking place in the community. It raised a broader issue as to whether we are militarizing domestic law enforcement unnecessarily, and is the federal government facilitating that? I have now received a review that I had ordered from all the agencies involved in this program, the 1033 program. I will be signing an executive order that specifies how we are going to make sure that that program is accountable, how we're going to make sure that that program is transparent, and how are we going to make sure that we're not building a militarized culture inside our local law enforcement. Third, I'm going to be proposing some new community policing initiatives that will significantly expand funding and training for local law enforcement, including up to 50,000 additional body-worn cameras for law enforcement agencies. And I look forward to working with Congress to make sure that, in addition to what I can do administratively and with resources that we've already got, that we are in a conversation with law enforcement that wants to do the right thing to make sure that they're adequately resourced for the training and the technology that can enhance trust between communities and police. And finally, as I mentioned, Eric Holder is going to be working in parallel with the task force to convene a series of these meetings all across the country, because this is not a problem simply of Ferguson, Missouri. This is a problem that is national. It is a solvable problem, but it is one that unfortunately spikes after one event and then fades into the background until something else happens. What we need is a sustained conversation in which in each region of the country people are talking about this honestly and then can move forward in a constructive fashion. Let me just close by saying this. There was a cautionary note, I think, from everybody here that there have been commissions before, there have been task forces, there have been conversations, and nothing happens. What I try to describe to people is why this time will be different. And part of the reason this time will be different is because the President of the United States is deeply invested in making sure that this time is different. When I hear the young people around this table talk about their experiences, it violates my belief in what America can be. To hear young people feeling marginalized and distrustful even after they've done everything right, that's not who we are. And I don't think that's who the overwhelming majority of Americans want us to be. And I think there may be a convergence here where we've got outstanding law enforcement officials who recognize that times have changed and want to be responsive. I know that Richard Berry of the International Association of Chiefs of Police spoke about how eager they are to work with us. I think that we've got activists on the ground who don't always get attention because it's oftentimes the people who aren't being constructive that get attention, but there are folks there who are working really hard. I think there's a maturity to the conversation right now that can lead us to actually getting some concrete results. And in the 2 years I have remaining as president, I'm going to make sure that we follow through. Not to solve every problem, not to tear down every barrier of mistrust that may exist, but to make things better. And that's how progress is always made in this great country of ours.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.